Welcome to the Landscape of Your Life with Alison Smith podcast. I'm Alison Smith. Each episode will help you see situations you don't know what to do in from a different perspective. Perspectives that enable you to understand all paths available to you and help you to get back on track. I do this by sharing unconventional tools from my landscape toolkit. Tools that help you to connect to your own inner landscapes and wisdom. As part of a prep for a workshop on leadership and nature, I ended up going back to my book and looking about what I'd written about nature. And I'm going to share you those three quotes. But what then I thought I might do actually for this episode is just read you extracts from the book, parts of the book that I'm proudest of, stories, examples of how I've used nature to help people get back on track. So I'll start with the quotes. We are made up of the same stuff as nature. We are nature. Say that again. We are made up of the same stuff as nature. We are nature. And I keep thinking I'm going to write a poem about that, but the time is not right because every time I try, I just get nowhere with it. But there's an element of if we're nature, perhaps that's why we're able to use nature so easily as a coach, because we recognize the patterns. We are part of nature. The second quote says, the closer to nature we are, the more we are able to be ourselves, untainted by a world constantly trying to alter or enhance something that is already beautiful. I talk often about the musts, oughts and shoulds. It's the getting back to our essential essence of who we are underneath all of those things that we think we should be doing. So the closer we are to nature, so perhaps the reason that I use nature as a coach is that it encourages me, but it also encourages you to get closer to nature, because I think the closer we are to nature, the more we are able to be ourselves, untainted by a world constantly trying to alter or enhance something that is already beautiful. And then a bit later in the book, I say, you're being invited by nature to remember what's often forgotten in this busy world and to look into nature's silence to provide answers you're craving. Peace for the busy, direction for the lost, beauty for the angry, calm for the fearful, and connection for the lonely. Look into nature's silence to provide answers. It's as if when you look into nature, then you see a pattern. Your inner wisdom, in that silence, your inner wisdom nudges you to see a pattern that is if nature is talking to you, is having a dialogue, is your coach, because it's asking you a question. How is this pattern relevant to you at this time? How can this be what you need to hear, see, feel, notice in this moment that would help you see the current situation from a different perspective? What I do in the rest of the book really is take sayings that we use when we're stuck and use the metaphor contained within that saying to help us get back on track. And so what I'm going to do now is just share with you some insights about each of those chapters. So one of the early chapters is about making mountains out of molehills. And it's a little different in that we already, when we're using that, know that we're making something bigger than it is. I think that's what we do, isn't it? Until we know the answer, until we know what to do, it's always going to feel bigger because we don't know what to do. And therefore, a lot of this book is about making situations that we've built into mountains and made them, or make it smaller, because it's more manageable, because we move from knowing what to do or not knowing what to do to knowing what to do. The next chapter is stuck in a rut, and what I'd like to do is read you the extract from that. A suit-wearing management team were walking up a single-track country lane surrounded by high, overgrown hedges. It was the middle of the countryside in southern England, and they were on a vision setting day discussing the future for their organization. The problem is, if we're not careful and we keep doing what we've always done, just like this lane, we'll peter out. Yes, we're stuck in a rut, someone else replied, as they looked down the lane towards the seemingly dead end further along, with grass growing in the middle of it. As they all nodded their heads, someone noticed a small hole in the hedge and said, to get out of this rut, we need to do something different, like go through that hole. 5 minutes later, after they'd all pushed their way through the hedge and dusted themselves down, they stood in the middle of an expansive green field at the top of a small hill, looking at the landscape all around them. That's better. No paths already decided, no direction already plotted, just an open field ready for us to make plans about. When the management team got back into the boardroom, the vision they identified for the organisation was certainly more innovative and creative than might have been imagined before the walk. Such a great example that if a team go out into nature, that you can find common ground rather than quite often if we're doing it in a meeting room and talking, it's like you've got different factions and one side going, this is what I want to have happen, this is what I want to have happen. What going out into nature enables you to do is to find common ground first, to have an agreement about, well, this is the rut, we're in a rut, we're all in agreement that we're in a rut. Oh, we all want to be at the top of that hill looking out at that expansive landscape. That then meant that they'd got a common goal, a common understanding about the problem that they were resolving, that then enabled them more to use their logical minds to find solutions. The next chapter is Can't See the Wood for the Trees. And it's my favourite story that opens the chapter. Jen rang me one day in a panic. I just don't know what to do. It's all got too much for me, she said. Over the years, Jen had been introduced to many of the unconventional tools I use in coaching. This call was prompted by a feeling of escalating panic and an inner knowing that the calm she craves is often on the other side of using one of these tools. The problem is, I need to feel better now. Don't have time for lots of thinking, pondering, or soul searching. Please help. At the time, I was writing the contents of this book. I asked her to listen as I read out all the chapter headings and let me know which one best reflected how she was feeling. Can't see the wood for the trees, definitely, she replied. For the next few minutes, I asked her to describe the wood and trees she was imagining. As with any metaphorical exploration, some questions make more sense than others. When I asked her how many trees there were, she replied, it's like a forest, there's loads of them. The phrase isn't, can't see the forest for the trees, I was a little surprised to find myself saying. What happens if you make the forest into a wood, I asked next. Oh, the trees change into beech trees, she replied. And then continued, oh my God, that's brilliant. I know what I've got to do. I must dash, thanks, and hung up. Now, that conversation took no more than 5 minutes. And it's such a great example of the fact that it's our mind, it's the representation of what we have about a current situation that is keeping us stuck. At no point did I or she discuss the situation or what it was that she needed to do differently. What we were working on was her representation of the situation. So she was representing it as stuck. All the components of everything that was making it stuck were there in her visualization of that wood and those trees. And therefore, what we did was make changes to that internal representation that opened windows and doors to a different way of seeing the situation that enabled her to relax and to find a solution about what she could do differently. And that's all that every of these chapters does. It plays around with the internal representation you have for a current situation and enables you to then find different options, different perspectives different opportunities that are currently hidden from view, but your inner wisdom does know it. The next chapter is Up the Creek Without a Paddle. And I've done something slightly different with that in terms of it's more about the process that you'd go through if you were up a creek. So the first thing you'd need to do is stop and then put your life jacket on so you're feeling safe. And then decide, where do I need to go? What's my mission? Where's my goal? What's my destination? And then I can decide what guides and travelers, differentiating between travelers who come through the journey with us versus guides who point us in a particular direction but don't travel along with us. And then a map. We obviously need a map of where we're going and a compass to help us understand whether we're on or off track. And then it's once we've done all those things, once we've got clear about where we want to go, clear about who's going to be doing it with us, we've got the map, we've got our compass, then we can then look to find that paddle again, because then we know the direction of travel we need to take this boat. So that's just a different way of looking at the saying, when we're up a creek without a paddle, and being able to metaphorically come up with a different set of potential actions for you to have a look at as a checklist, really, and go, oh, actually, what I'm missing is a map, or what I'm missing is I'm not listening to that inner compass, or, oh, yeah, I need a guide for this. Like a fish out of water is the next chapter. And the interesting thing about that was that I was never more surprised than when I sat down to write it, because I think prior to writing the chapter, I'd always imagined and bought into what we say to people when they say, oh, I feel like a fish out of water. It was, oh, it's all right, it's your comfort zone, you'll get better. You know, you just need to expand your comfort zone, you'll feel better in a little while. And yet, if somebody is saying they feel like a fish out of water, they're actually telling you they feel like they're going to die, metaphorically. But there is an element of what they're saying is they need to get back into the water in order to be able to think, access, logical thinking, and to actually be able to plan what to do. So the first thing we need to do when we're like a fish out of water is to get back in the water and then to take action to actually feel better afterwards, in terms of being able to either, how do I make the leaps between one bit of water and another smaller? How can I prepare myself to be able to make that leap even better or easier? The next chapter is Head in the Sand, and it's very rarely do we use the, you know, we don't sort of turn around and go, oh, isn't it great? I've got my head in the sand. So it's quite often a statement that we will use about somebody else. And the difficulty there is the fact that somebody with the head in the sand isn't going to take it out just because you tell them to. But nevertheless, if you're aware that you're, I suppose, avoiding tackling something. So examples in the book is about the fact that, you know, my boss is a bully, but it's the fifth bullying boss you've had, or your partner has been unfaithful, and this is the fourth unfaithful partner, or the dance teacher doesn't understand how to motivate you, and yet they're the 15th dance teacher who has failed to motivate you, or the diet doesn't work, and that's the 35th diet that hasn't worked, or the clients just don't get what we're about, and it's the 50th client who's rejected you, or you've made me angry, and you're the 15th person to make me angry. So it's, we can have our head in the sand about habits and behaviours where we're still blaming the other person when we actually need to take responsibility back. So there is an element of the chapter shines a light, really, on some of the areas where we may have, or you may have, your head in the sand about, in order for you to then have a choice about what to do next. The next chapter is two out on a limb and in at the deep end. And the out on a limb is really interesting. I've talked about it in another episode, in that once you're out on the limb, there is no going back. So the only way that you can do is go forward. It's like, once we're out on a limb, we don't go back. we keep going forward, because it's the precariousness of, oh, once we're out on a limb, I can't move. Well, you can, you don't want to do what you need to do. So that's an interesting saying that's basically saying, I know you want to go back, but you can't. So stop it. Just make progress, move forward. Miss the tide is one of the final sayings that we use when we're stuck. Really interesting if you think about a tide, because there's another tide in most places within the same day. And therefore, what's this impatience about? Why is it that we think that we've got to, hit a particular time rather than have a bit more patience with ourselves and say, you know what, I'll catch the next tide. And I think when there's a poem that I've written about the tide, so I'll share that in comments. But the common theme really with the book is the fact that we're using idioms, sayings that have got nature contained within them, and we're using those sayings to tell ourselves that we're stuck. And yet the very landscape contained within those idioms actually have the potential for solutions. So when you can't see the wood for the trees, of course, if you were in a wood, there's lots of different options and opportunities to be able to see the wood, whether it's a map, getting to higher ground, etc. So the book is Can't See the Wood for the Trees, Landscaping Your Life to Get Back on Track. It's by me, Alison Smith, and it's available. It's not available on Kindle, but it's also available on from any online stockists. We've just got one more episode left of this series, this first series of my podcast. And so next week, I'm going to be sharing with you how to use this podcast, because you can come back to this podcast time and time again, and even listen to the same episode and get something different from it. So I'm going to explore and share how I might use this podcast if I came across it out of the blue and I was feeling stuck and didn't know what to do. So that's next week's episode. And then we'll be back again in the new year. As ever, leave me comments about what you've taken from today's episode. If you enjoyed today's exploration, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. You can find out more about what I do using the hashtag #LandscapingYourLife on social media. Thank you for listening. Until next time, from the Landscaping Your Life with Alison Smith podcast. Tools that help you see situations from a different perspective to help you get back on track.